This week on Making Contact.
Having met Iraqis, I really have reservations about killing them.
It's easy to go in and pound Iraq into submission, but the aftermath was never something that they took into consideration how they were going to keep the peace.
The insurgency, my God, you have to admire those people.
They've all worn the uniform of the United States military, but when it comes to the war in Iraq, they don't always think alike. On this week's edition, prepared by associate producer Justin Beck, we take a look at some of the different ways the war has affected soldiers and their families, both personally and politically. I'm Amy Pomerleau, your host on Making Contact, an international radio program creating connections between people, vital ideas, and important information.
I'm Josie Thompson Fike. I've been a veterinarian for 26 years and married for 28. And I have a son in the military.
My name is Dylan Fike. I'm 25 years old. I live in Mountain View, California, South Bay Area. I currently am a part of the Army Reserve. I am in the 481st Transportation Company. What I do is I work on landing crafts. And I've been in the reserves for 4 years now. You know, I wanted to something a little challenging, a little more challenge, and I wanted something exciting. I also wanted to do something for myself and my country, and I thought the military was a great avenue to take up those ambitions that I had. That seemed very interesting, adventurous, and I just decided to give it a shot.
My first impression, of course, was, why are you doing that? And not something I thought my kids would do. And I believe he talked to his dad first, because I think he knew how I would feel. And by the time he really told me, it was a done deal. I didn't choose to be a military mom. It chose me.
My name is John Fike. I'm 58 years old. I'm the father of Dylan Fike. I had mixed feelings about it at the time, a certain amount of pride, because I thought at that time it could be a good thing for him. But on the other hand, the idea of the military was frightening in as much as what it could entail and what subsequently is shown to be true. And I mentioned to Dylan, was he aware of the fact that while the perks and the discipline and the physical training is all nice, if there was ever any kind of war, he would be in the military, therefore would be called to take part in that action.
September 11th, I was sleeping. I woke up to a phone call from my mom, and she says, Dylan, turn on the TV right now. Just do it. So I turned on the television, and I saw the towers burning. I got a call from later that evening from my first sergeant saying, be ready to support us. You know, I wasn't fully qualified in my training. I believe I had one more summer to go to get ready to do my job. But he said, you know, get ready. I don't know what's going to happen, but, you know, have all your stuff ready to come in and help us out, and we might be going somewhere. 6 months to a year later, our unit was mobilized, and we are on currently three rotations. Each rotation is, I believe, 12 to 15 months long. And what they do is they send a couple crews over there, and we're based out of Kuwait. And we were transporting all sorts of goods in the Persian Gulf, intercoastal waterways. So right now, currently, we're on our second rotation, and we're coming up on our third and final one this September. So that's the one where, you know, I might be involved. I'm not really sure what's happening as far as whether I'll go or not. But, you know, I'd say there's a good chance, probably 80% chance that I'll be going next September.
I can't imagine what that will be like. You know, I think I'd cry every day.
Dylan's his own man. And he made his decision. He's living by his decision. He's honoring decision. I have great admiration and pride that he's doing that. You know, I don't want to see him go just from a personal point of view. And I don't want to see any more of American men and women lose their lives or be injured. I don't want to see that anymore. But the fact is, we are there, and rightly or wrongly.
There was no reason for us to attack. There was no reason. They did not. The reason that they based it on was a lie.
I have a lot of mixed opinions on that. I don't necessarily know if it's right or if it's wrong. What I do know now is that we have a lot of troops over there. We're losing American lives every day. And I think we put ourselves in a situation where, you know, we dug ourselves in a hole. We need to get out of it. The fact of the matter is that we're over there and we need to take care of business now. We need to overwhelm, you know, the insurgency.
I don't think that we're going to be capable of putting down the insurgency. I think that's just going to keep happening because we're an occupying force, and the longer we're there, I think the more people are going to be unhappy about it, more the Iraqi people will be unhappy about it. I personally don't see that as a way to end the war. I think Dylan is very young in his thinking, and I think it takes a lot of reading and a lot of thinking and a lot of exploring of issues, which I don't think he's done.
My mom has always been supportive of me. Of course, her views are very liberal, and she doesn't want me to go over there. And I can see her reasoning 100%. You know, she doesn't want to lose me.
Actually, I find it incredibly difficult to talk about or think about. It's just unthinkable. I can't imagine it. You know, the pain, the incredible pain. And maybe that's maybe partly why I wanted to, you know, kind of speak out now and speak out before and wish it could stop.
Our opinions may differ, but she knows that if I have to go over there, I will, and I have no problem with that. And she'll cry, and she'll miss me, and she'll pray. You know, our military has to do its job. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, the cost of war is the loss of life, and that's just a harsh reality we all have to deal with. And I don't like to see anyone die, and that's what happens in war. People die.
The military is like a loaded gun. You point it and you fire it, and it's going to put a big fat hole in something. You know, it's a killing machine. My name is Diana Morrison. I am 36. I joined the military in 1986 when I was 17, and I joined the National Guard in 1996. I've been on numerous deployments, including Iraq. I was a gunner on a Humvee. We patrolled what they call a main supply route that ran west of Baghdad. So we did night patrol. And one night we were headed around a mosque, which we knew to be a bad area. And all of a sudden something exploded next to our vehicle. And my platoon sergeant again was driving, and he starts swerving all over the road. And I don't remember if there was another explosion, but we heard stuff blowing up behind us. And we were turning around, and I saw a pink ring, and then it was like an eclipse, a little eclipse way in the distance, and I knew exactly what it was, and I yelled, RPG. And it was all in slow motion. It was like a movie, I swear, because it got from this little pinpoint of light to this ball of red flame, and it flew over the road and blew up across the other way. So I immediately fired, and I emptied 200 rounds. And then we stopped. Everything was quiet. And we sent out illumination flares and searched the area. And it turned out that we ended up killing a 2-year-old and a 7-year-old. Collateral damage, you know, it's just, we spent so many rounds downrange that we killed these two kids, which is hard to take, but I wouldn't have changed. I mean, there isn't anything I can do about it, unfortunately. I did what I had to do to make sure that we stayed alive, because the best way to keep somebody from firing at you is to fire back at them, keeps their head down. So I don't think I did anything wrong, but if we had never been in that country, those two kids wouldn't be dead. So I questioned the whole purpose of even being there. You know, the people who are suffering are the Iraqi civilians, and this is how they suffer. I thought maybe we were actually going to go and do some good. I don't know if I was keeping that in my head and as an illusion, or if I, you know, just to make myself feel better. But after a while, I just realized nothing was changing for Iraqis. It's sad that we're okay to rush in. Our first reaction is we'll go to war. It seems to me that we need to educate ourselves about what's going on in the world and understand these things before we just go killing hundreds of thousands of people. I belong to Veterans for Peace, and I co-founded a group called Iraq Veterans Against the War, which is trying to stop the war. And one of the most common questions I get is, how do you support the troops? And my response is, you educate yourself on what's going on in the world. Then you know, if you start hearing rumblings of war, then you can say, I'm against that. I don't think that's right. We shouldn't, you know, educate yourself about other cultures. Having met Iraqis, I really have reservations about killing them. You know, they're as human as you and I, you know.
Having gone active duty and gone to war, I always refer to it as the most amazing adventure of a lifetime. And not all adventures are positive, but it certainly was an adventure in that personally I was able to gain an incredible amount of self-confidence and self-esteem because at 47, I did it. My name is Elizabeth Vasquez, and I'm from Vallejo, California. I went into the military right after high school, and I served 6.5 years of active duty. And it was a phenomenal experience, but at the time I decided to, you know, after 6.5 years to get out, went on to marry, raise a family, work, and 17.5 years later, in June of 97, I was now divorced. I had 3 children who were fairly independent, but I never got over missing the camaraderie and the overall adventure of the military. So I joined at 42 back to the National Guard, the California National Guard. In November of 2002, we had gone away for, you know, a weekend of training. And when we got back, our colonel, that's when he informed us that we were probably going to be sent overseas within the next 45 days. We were very excited because, you know, we had been called upon, you know, to defend our families and our country. We didn't know against what and really why, but by golly, we were going to do it. We had become a little family, and so we were going to go kick ass together. My job and what I was best at was supporting my troops. We're supporting my soldiers. And I feel good about what I did, and I did it well. At the same time, when I was sent away from my unit to go and do these armed escorts or do perimeter guard, it gave me an opportunity to see the bigger picture of why we were there. And I was really disappointed in that I didn't see this great freedom going on. And all I saw was we went in there, we destroyed so much of their country. And so here we are having to rebuild it, but we broke it. We destroyed their water. We destroyed their electrical plants. We destroyed their hospitals. I truly believe that the Iraqi people were much better off without us, and we have caused more damage than good. I had an opportunity to go to Mosul, and I was there for 3 days. And we were working in the hospitals and we were working in the schools and they were feeding the people, and the relationship between the Iraqis and the Americans was terrific. It was great. You could freely go through the city. And to hear now that it's such a hotbed of, you know, of insurgency is amazing. What is, you know, we've lost every step that we took forward. We have now lost and gone backwards. The insurgency, my God, you have to admire those people. If my country was being occupied right now, there would be Americans hiding in the fields, making bombs. That is our history, the revolution. That's how the National Guard started, was the American militia. These people are no different. They are defending their rights, their beliefs, their country. Yes, they blow up many of their own. But Where is the arrogance that we have that we think we can come in with tanks and guns and body armor and say, I always get this John Wayne vision in my head. Okay, Pilgrim, you know, we're taking over. My car has several bumper stickers of support our troops and yellow ribbons. And around my license plate, I have Army Mom. My son is stationed in Baghdad and has been there since March of 2004. And it just so happens that when I've stopped for gas twice in the last month, I've had usually young to middle-aged men come up and want to talk about it and say, oh, so you got a kid over there? And I say, yes, I do, you know. And both times they have been wonderfully supportive and, you know, I'm going to pray for him and we support our troops and everything. And, oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. And then I believe there's a great misconception. If you support the troops, then you must be very right wing, because both these times these wonderful men who said they would pray for my son and they supported the troops and all would start in about damn liberals and don't they understand what's going on and everything, and invariably I have to say, but I'm a liberal, I support our troops, but I'm against the war. When I think about Iraq, I think the fact that I was there gives me some credibility in being able to speak out as a mother. I have a child there. You know, I can afford to speak out. I know that sometimes it's almost not politically correct, but it's a fact of life right now.
We'll hear from more soldiers and their families in a few moments. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information or for cassette or CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. That's 800-529-5736. You can also visit our website at radioproject.org.
My name is Dan. I'm 26 years old. I joined the Army about 2.5 years ago. This was a couple months after the 9/11 thing had happened. And part of the reasoning was that, as crazy it might sound, I thought that there was a good chance that I might get to go to war, maybe getting to see some action, seeing what it's really like. And it's crazy, I suppose, but it's something I wanted to experience for myself.
My name's Aaliyah. I'm 24 years old. I'm married to Dan, who's over in Iraq on leave right now. We've been friends for a long time, since high school. I was the last person that he told that he was joining the Army because he knew that I wasn't going to agree with that. I actually told him he was a dumbass for joining because I knew he would go to war and I didn't want him to.
February 2002 would have been when I joined. While I was in basic, the time that they had started invading Afghanistan. I actually was a little bit let down that I wasn't able to go because I thought that was going to be it. Never in a million years would I have considered us going into Iraq. So I thought that was it. I had lost my chance. And then when Iraq came up, I actually volunteered to go. January 2003, we got word that we would be deploying. And nobody expected it to be the way it was. Nobody expected us to actually be getting as much action as we do. There's a particular area in Baghdad that we go through a lot, and that seems to be where we get hit all the time. It's like, sometimes I feel like I know I'm going through there and I'm just basically waiting for it to happen because, you know, it's kind of eventually.
Seeing headlines, I look the other way. A lot of the times I can't deal with it. I mean, even listening to him talk about getting attacked just now, I mean, I could feel myself kind of leaving, you know, like kind of daydreaming, not really wanting to hear it. But at the same time, I do want to know what's going on because, you know, my fear is that he'll come home and and not know how to relate to me. This whole war has left me really bitter, and I have a lot of resentment, and I'm usually a pretty well-mannered person, but I've gotten into some pretty heated debates with people, complete strangers. People assume that military families support the war and support Bush. You know, at first I was kind of afraid being a military wife saying, yeah, I don't support the war, because, you know, I kind of thought that people might attack me. But now I'm pretty open about it. I've gone to some demonstrations. I've written letters to the editor, and I'm not afraid to tell people how I feel about this.
Aaliyah's a strong-minded person, and she has her own ideas, and whatever she chooses to pursue, that's her thing. I don't agree with everything, and she doesn't agree with all my thoughts, but that's just life.
I was never convinced that there was a reason to go. I don't know if they had weapons of mass destruction or not. Kind of looks like they didn't. So this whole idea about us needing to go to Iraq to protect us, I think that's just a bogus argument.
I really don't know what their reason for wanting to get into Iraq so badly was, but obviously it was rushed. They just blindly rushed into something like this without taking the consequences into account. It's easy to go in and pound Iraq into submission, but the aftermath was never something that they took into consideration how they were going to keep the peace. I myself have a respect for the enemy. It's a very smart enemy. And I can understand their perspective, where they didn't exactly ask for us to be there. You give value to human life. So in taking it away, it becomes something that's not easy to do. But if you're able to dehumanize them and make them not much of anything, then it becomes easier. And you have to, it's in order to survive, you almost have to do that. And you have to learn to hate. Because hating someone is the easiest way to be able to defend yourself if it comes to it. And it's unfortunate that I've had to learn to cultivate it, but that's just the way it is, and I've come to terms with it. That's war. It's not a pretty thing, but it's what has to be.
And I can say that if Dan is dehumanizing people, I can't say that everyone is, but I would say the vast majority is, because Dan is not that kind of person. He treats everyone as an individual. He doesn't prejudge people. So I see that as a way that the war has changed him. You know, I hope that he doesn't carry that back here with him, but I know that if he's doing that there, you know, it's a messed up situation, because it's not easy for him to do that.
My name is Nadia McCaffrey. I am Sergeant Patrick McCaffrey's mother, who was killed on June 22nd in Balad, in Iraq, killed in an ambush. September 11 is really what started the whole thing. Patrick, before that, had a very good life. He had a very good job, employed for 13 years in the same place, made very good money. He had what he needed. And when, here comes 9/11. Every one of us has reacted one way or another, but Patrick said, I need to do something. And what came to him was, why not the National Guard? The guards are here to assist people in case of catastrophe. Always have been. And in his mind, well, they didn't go to war, that's for sure. And they give one weekend a month, which was fine for him. And of course, he had no idea that he would end up his life in Iraq. He was working with the engineer corps. And instead of doing what he was trained for, he was training Iraqi men to become soldier or to become police. June 22nd was very, very hot. It was 125 degrees, but I think it reached 135, which is really, if you think of it, atrocious. That day, two people have dropped from heat exhaustion, including Patrick, commanding officer. Those people were evacuated, and they had to have another officer replacing him. and this officer divided the unit, and he let Patrick and another soldier and himself together, followed by five Iraqi trainees and the translator. Patrick was in the middle, the officer in the back, and the soldier in front. The officer behind Patrick was shot behind the head twice, execution style. When he heard the shot coming behind him, he turned around and ran to the soldier who had collapsed, tried to shield him and return fire. Three of the Iraqi trainees disappeared. Patrick was hit on both sides through the bulletproof vest, and he bled to death, basically. I don't hold the Iraqi responsible for anything. We are invading their country. Why are we in Iraq? It's obvious. For the oil, isn't it? I want this to stop, and I'm speaking as much as I can, and I do everything I can to stop the killing. Not just us, but on both sides. Just after Patrick died, I knew I was going to go there because I wanted to see where he was killed exactly, the spot. One other thing that I knew I had to do from the start is I need to do something with the children. Patrick loved those children so much and tried to do everything he could. I have to keep this up. So we're doing the trip to the Jordan border, and we're bringing 10 to 15 boxes of medicine for the children, first aids, all kinds of things that they really need. We are also looking into establishing a peace camp. And it would involve a permanent camp where people could come from Iraq to Jordan to not just have first aid, but also to start something with peace. From mother to mother, people to people, no government involved. So just the people. And people who have suffered from the war, I think, would be the best one to talk about peace.
That's it for this edition of Making Contact. Thanks for listening. This report was prepared by associate producer Justin Beck. Special thanks to April Scott, Keith DeHaze, Melanie Peterson, Alina Potts, Denise Van Oort, Amelia Beamer, and Bill Creighton. Thanks also to production interns Renita Pitts and Shanina Shoemate. Our theme music is by the Charlie Hunter Trio. Making Contact is an independent production funded primarily by individual contributors. We're committed to providing a forum for voices and opinions not often heard in the mass media. If you'd like to support our work, or if you have suggestions for future programs, we'd love to hear from you. For a cassette or CD copy of the program, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736. That's 800-529-5736. You can also visit our website at radioproject.org. Lisa Rudman is our executive director, Justin Beck, associate producer, Rashen McKee, office manager, Dorian Taylor, outreach and distribution, Peggy Law, founding director, Norman Solomon, senior advisor, David Barsamian, national advisor, and I'm your host and production director, Amy Pomerleau.